You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to your Thursday edition of the Locked On Bucs podcast. I'm your host, David Harrison, joined as I am on every Thursday by Evan Winter, both of us credentialed writers for BucsNation.com, part of SB Nation. Follow me on Twitter at DH82_Bucs and follow Evan at Evan_Winter. Follow Bucs Nation over at Bucs_Nation and then follow the show at Locked On Bucs. Evan, so a few of our listeners, I know you and I have been pretty excited to do it, and a few of our listeners have chimed in saying that they're pretty excited about it. We're going to start getting into prospects, and I think we'll get a little bit deeper into prospects as we get closer. Obviously, we've got some all-star games coming up. We've got the combine coming up, so there's a lot more information out there to gather to kind of make some full pictures of some of these players. But it's going to be an interesting exercise to start looking at some of these guys and find the ones that kind of pique our interest as individuals that we might come back to a little bit later down the road. And we've asked our listeners to help out with that process, and they've done a great job. We've already got about 10 names. We're going to get through the first five today. I don't know if we're going to do five every episode, but we'll try five today. We'll see how it goes, how the time goes, because I don't want to drag them on too long, but I don't want to rush through them either. So we'll see how five works. Maybe we'll cut it down to three. We'll kind of see how it goes. But are you ready? You ready to get into this?
Let's do it, man.
All right. So let's kick it off with our contest winner, Chris. And for those who are listening, it might sound a little bit weird because Chris sent this voicemail before the end of the season. Actually, all of these voicemails that we're playing today came in before the end of the season. So a little bit of a grain of salt with some of the stuff in here, guys.
Hey, James. Hey, David. It's Chris at TV_Bucs_for life. Just wanted to say great win against the Colts. Three more to go. I know it's ticket one game at a time, but hopefully let's get four in a row, starting with Detroit this week. Calling in for the prospect show. There's some prospects I really like in this draft. I just really think, like outside of the first round, from what I've seen so far, you're not going to find many good interior defensive line or even quality offensive line. As far as, like, if you want defensive line or offensive line, you want to get it in the first round of this year's draft, because after that, the drop off is pretty huge. One prospect I really like, I'm not sure exactly, you know, when I do the mock draft machine, he still shows up in the sixth round, but I would think you want to, I think he might go a little bit earlier, maybe fifth. But the safety from Minnesota, I want to say it's named Antoine Brooks Jr., I believe what his name was. I think he's going to be a fourth or fifth round prospect. And just not knowing, you know, the situation with Justin Evans, man, like, is this guy even going to play football again? You know, he's just career after, you know, injury just keeps stymieing his career. Had the Achilles, then a different injury, now a different injury, and then ended up just not playing this year. Hopefully he can recover and come back. I really think he could do really well in Todd Bowles' scheme, but you also have to have a plan B, and I really like this guy out of Minnesota. So let me know what your thoughts are, and go Bucks.
All right, Chris, appreciate the phone call. And yeah, man, so Evan, you and I kind of split the prospects that were given into these voicemails, and I'm just going to give our listeners a little bit of behind the scenes. Chris, I thought when I first listened to your voicemail, I honestly thought you were talking about Antoine Brooks Jr., who is a safety, well, defensive back, who plays for Maryland. And it didn't dawn on me until shortly before this recording that you were talking about Antoine Winfield Jr. out of Minnesota, which makes a little bit more. I mean, Brooks is not bad. I'm sure we'll talk about him at some point in time. Not a bad prospect himself, but Antoine Winfield Jr. is definitely the hotter prospect, I think. So I went ahead and I studied him. Evan had a little bit more time to study him because he put that together before I did. But here's what I gathered, and then we'll let Evan fill in the blanks for me. So obviously defensive back Antoine Winfield Jr. Yes, the son of Ohio State great Antoine Winfield Sr. Let me say that again because James isn't here to stop me. Ohio State Buckeye, great Antoine Winfield Sr.
He was awesome. He was awesome when he played in the NFL. So, yes, Antoine Winfield all the way. All the
way. He was great across the board. Antoine Winfield Jr., so the son, the prodigy behind the master, redshirt sophomore, all right, comes in at 5'10", 205 pounds, 21 years old as a redshirt sophomore. The reason that is because he was granted two medical redshirt waivers because of shortened seasons in 2017 and 2018, one due to a hamstring, one due to a foot injury. So that's why he's a sophomore, even though he actually spent 4 years at the University of Minnesota. Came out of high school playing free safety and strong safety. Was a three-star recruit by most recruiting evaluations. That's pretty much everything I have leading into this season. So this year, something that I found interesting, Evan, that I'm sure you found as well, that I wasn't expecting, is that he became the 2019 Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year, beating Ohio State cornerback Jeff Okudah, which I think is an atrocity and an absolute outrage. But you know what? If that's what the voters believe, then who am I to correct them? And that just means that Antoine Winfield Jr. climbs my board a little bit just for that fact alone, because Jeff Okudah is considered a lottery pick, which for those who aren't NBA fans, he's going to a team that definitely didn't make the playoffs this year. 2019, Winfield Jr. came through with 7 interceptions, played the entire season injury-free. One of those interceptions he took back for a touchdown, had 83 total tackles, 58 solo, and came up with 3 sacks. So here's kind of my evaluation blurb, right? He's a team captain, defensive and special teams contributor, can play in the box or provide coverage. Excellent ability to read the quarterback and react to what he sees. Trust his eyes, quick to close, solid ball skills, never believes he's out of a play. High motor guy who will pursue from anywhere on the field. Good speed with fast acceleration coming after interceptions. Helped lead him to 2 defensive scores and 1 punt return score. Scored in 3 of his seasons despite playing in just 4 games in years 2 and 3 for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. The biggest downfall I have for Antoine Winfield Jr. right now is this could have been his senior year. Now, granted, if he doesn't have the injuries, he might have left last year if everything turned out the way it kind of did anyway. But being that he spent 4 years in Minnesota, he's a guy who could have been eligible to play at a Senior Bowl. And with all the talent hitting Mobile this year, it would have been great to see him line up against some of those talented guys and against some of the talented quarterbacks that are going to be there. So that's kind of the only drawback, is the fact that he is a redshirt sophomore. So I don't believe anyway that he's eligible. And great timing, Chris, for you and for the show, I guess, because he actually just declared today, as we're recording, yesterday as you're listening to this, for the NFL draft. So Antoine Winfield Jr., safety, defensive back out of the University of Minnesota, playing for the Gophers, eligible in the draft. To me right now, guys, he's a day 2 guy, but he's definitely got some upside to him and a potential to enter into the day 1 conversation, depending on how his workouts go, depending on how the combine goes, especially. But I think missing out on some of those all-star games is really going to kind of hurt his ability to rise up the draft boards. But still a guy that you should know getting in towards the end of day 1 and then early day 2.
I mean, it's the same Antoine Winfield that begat Chris Gamble, who begat Nate Clements, who begat Marshawn Lattimore, who begat Bradley Roby. I mean, whatever
line. That is some beautiful Ohio State lineage you're dropping on the ears of our listeners.
I give credit where credit's due. Ohio State has put out a pretty talented core of cornerbacks over the past few years, and Antoine Winfield Jr. is in the exact type of lineage, except for he just goes to Minnesota. This dude is the exact free range safety that this Todd Bowles defense needs. I know they were looking at Mike Edwards for that role last year, but as much as I love Mike Edwards, I think he's more of a depth player. I don't think he has the necessary athleticism to be the true free range safety that this defense needs. Everybody also keeps pointing to Justin Evans, but my thing with Justin Evans is by the time he comes back, if he even comes back for training camp, that's almost going to be 2 years since he's played. And he's also had Achilles heel injuries, I believe a calf injury as well, if I remember correctly. Those are the type of injuries you don't want with a player who's known for athleticism and speed and range. So there is absolutely no guarantee that Justin Evans is going to be this guy we thought he was going to be. So in my opinion, the Bucks need to do whatever they need to do in order to ensure that they have enough players who can play the back end and sew up that back end, because even Jordan Whitehead, as effective as he was, he's more effective in the box. He's more effective guarding your athletic tight ends, which he's shown us he can do. He's really not your true free range safety, but even he had an injury that ended his season early last year. So no matter what, you want depth. And Antoine Winfield Jr. is that guy. On top of what you talked about, his injuries, a lot of people knock his size. I think he's 5'10", 205, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Hey, Earl Thomas is 5'10", 225. Yep. So all you got to do, put on about 10 or 15 pounds, and he's good to go, man.
Tyrann Mathieu, I mean –
exactly.
Listen, exactly. In today's NFL, your free safeties, I mean, can they be too small? Yeah, they can. But 5'10", 200 plus is not too small for a free safety in the right scheme and with the right technique. And this defensive coordinator has already shown that guys who meet or match Antoine Winfield's measurables can be successful in his defense and in his scheme. And I'll tell you, man, you talked about off the air, you talked about his range, and his range is amazing. But I think what helps his range and what really stood out to me, and just in the little bit that I did get to watch him so far, is his ability to diagnose. Like, that dude reads the quarterback in the field very well. And he's extremely confident. Now, as a rookie, that's probably going to get him in trouble a little bit, because quarterbacks, especially veteran quarterbacks, are going to key in on that, and offensive coordinators are going to key in on that, and he's going to get manipulated by some of these quarterbacks. But once his ability to read, diagnose, and his confidence meets up with his NFL experience, he has the potential to be something that's going to be really solid at the NFL level.
Yeah, and this secondary is all about getting better. I mean, we witnessed that this year as the season went on, and these guys are all selfless. They're not selfish. They're going to try to make one another better. So he's only going to get better, hopefully, if we're following the trend of 2019 as the season wears on and as his career wears on. So whatever instinctual, you know, or maybe – areas where he has trouble reading certain plays, wherever he has trouble doing that, that can always be improved. Intangibles can always be improved. So, yeah.
Fortunately for me, given his lineage, given his relationship in the Big Ten, even though I studied Antoine Brooks Jr. first, I was still able to kind of recover pretty well with Antoine Winfield. Kind of had a head start there a little bit.
Yeah, man. Well, it's easy. It's also easy when he follows a great like his dad. So, dude, when he played for the Bills and Vikings, man, he was one of my favorite cornerbacks in the league at the time. So he was great.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, like, if you're a Vikings fan and you're not pulling for the Minnesota Vikings to draft Antoine Winfield Jr.
Right.
I don't know what you're doing, Jerry, for football. So.
Especially after the year Xavier Rhodes had. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly. But all right, Chris, hey, thanks for the recommendation. Thanks for the voicemail. I'm happy we were able to eventually get to the right player for you. And yeah, I mean, keep them coming. If you got more, let us know either in the voicemail line or, you know, the DMs, or just hit the tweets, whatever you want to do. But Evan, you have your next up here with some other prospects. So let's go ahead and get to our next voicemail from Jim.
Hey, David and Evan, this is Jim in South Carolina, South Kakalaki. I do have four prospects for you guys to discuss, since you're going to be talking about possible draft picks. The first one is Jedrick Wills out of Alabama, offensive tackle. I think it'd be a great replacement for DeMar Dotson. Curtis Weaver, edge rusher out of Boise State. Najee Harris out of Alabama, running back. And a little-known receiver by the name of Aaron Parker out of Rhode Island. So if you guys can talk about those four, that would be great. Thanks, guys. Take care, and go Bucks.
All right, Evan. So you got two. Well, I don't know what to call them, linemen. You got an offensive tackle, you got an edge rusher, you got a running back. I'll let you pick where to start, brother, and go for it.
Just so happens to be three positions that the Bucks are going to have to consider in free agency and the draft in 2020. I'll go ahead and start with Jedrick Willis just because he recently declared for the draft. I believe he's the number six offensive tackle in the draft, if that's correct, or maybe he's the sixth offensive lineman. I can't remember the exact ranking. Either way, you got to love what this guy can do. He would definitely be worth the number 14 overall pick. The only thing concerns me is, and this is from Joe Marino of draftnetwork.com, these are his exact words: still developing his technique and pass protection, particularly with reaching his set points. That's kind of a concern, especially whenever you have a left tackle that has that exact same, he's not still developing his technique, but at times he gets beat at the point of set at the arc, you know, at the pass rushing arc or the pass blocking arc, whichever way you want to look at it. And that to me is a little bit of a liability at a right tackle, but at the same time, you're going to pay him a lot less than Damar Dotson. So I would be okay with the Bucs if they took him overall at number 14. But then again, whenever you look at just what he was a part at as a whole when it comes to Alabama's offensive line. First off, CBSSports.com has him going number 3 overall. So that right there speaks a lot towards his flexibility, his athleticism, and also they obviously believe he could be a left tackle for the Detroit Lions with number 3 overall pick, and that was from a mock draft about 2 days ago. But he was also a part of the Alabama offensive line that was 9th in terms of sack rate in the entire country, 3.3%, and was part of one of the best offensive lines when it came to allowing room for running backs. They were 18th in adjusted line yards, according to Football Outsiders. So no matter what, I think if you plug Jedrick Willis in with a good offensive line, which according to PFF, Tampa Bay had a top 10 offensive line in 2019. Now that's up for debate, definitely. But we can definitely agree that the left side is more than serviceable and is at least solid. So if you put Jedrick Willis, maybe he can be that piece that helps escalate the line. But overall, you gotta like what he brings. But at the same time, don't expect him to hang the moon as a rookie.
No, I mean that's very good expectation management, and I think a lot of things that go into drafting players has to do with expectation management. Again, you draft a quarterback number 1 overall, you're expecting a future Hall of Famer who's going to lead you to the playoffs and probably multiple Super Bowl opportunities. Whereas you draft a left tackle number 14, you're expecting a starter who's got some solid upside. You draft a left tackle in the 3rd round, and you're expecting a guy who's going to provide some depth. So if all 3 of those players become starters and have average careers, 2 of them are busts and 1 of them is a great value pick. So I think expectation management is key to a lot of these things. And Jedrick Willis is a guy who, I mean, I don't think anybody's surprised that he's coming into the NFL draft. I don't honestly believe he's going to be available when the Buccaneers come up and draft. No. Again, there's a lot of things still to come. You know, I mean, there's interviews, there's workouts. But if Alabama does anything great, I mean, I don't know, even better than playing college football, it's preparing their guys from the National Football League, which of course makes him a more attractive prospect to a Buccaneers fan especially, but it also makes him a more attractive prospect to other teams. And you already mentioned, you know, the possible connection with the Detroit Lions. If, you know, Matt Patricia's already coming back, and he's probably coming back on a 1-year deal. You know what I mean? Not contractually speaking, but it's basically, hey, Matt, we got to put this thing together this year, and we got to show that we're moving towards something positive, or we're going to move on from you, period. And the key to doing that is keeping your franchise quarterback from suffering a 3rd straight back injury that basically ends his season. And the best way to do that is how? Pass protection. You keep pass rushers off of his back won't get injured, right? That's the theory here. So, yeah, I mean, Jedrick Willis to the Detroit Lions makes a lot of sense, you know, if that's the direction that they go in April. But yeah, Evan, great rundown. I'm a really big fan of him too. Unless they trade up, which I'm pretty much never an advocate of trading up, I don't see the Buccaneers having a shot at him, but it's good to know who he is anyway. I'll tell you what, let's go away from Alabama, but I want you to double up because you got 3 prospects. I've only got 2, and let's give the guys what your thoughts on Curtis Weaver out of Boise State.
So obviously he's an edge. Now he's got the length to transfer to the outside linebacker, you know, become the true edge player at 603 feet, 6'3", 265 pounds. And I mean, dude, looking at his career over just 3 years at Boise State, he has 34 sacks. He's never had a season with less than 8 sacks in a season, which is pretty remarkable considering that he averages over 11 sacks per season. And the only thing is, though, he's never really had a standout game like your Khalil Mack when he played for Buffalo against Ohio State, where he had 2.5 sacks, you know, and a pick 6, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, does consistency outweigh the flash performance against elite talent? That's the question you've got to ask, and that's where you know, unfortunately, I fall a little short when it comes to evaluating draft prospects. When it comes to consistency, this guy's got it down. And I could really see him becoming a Yannick Ngakoue type pick, not necessarily in the second round, not necessarily meaning that he's going to produce at that high of a level when he reaches the NFL in his first few years. But he could definitely come in and be a type of role player that you could find possibly in the third round on day two, or maybe even, you know, day three, just depending on how the draft goes. But overall, if you have confidence in you in what you're doing on in the front seven and your defensive line and your linebackers coach, you could easily draft this guy and make him an impactful player pretty quickly.
Yeah, sounds good. And honestly, he's a guy I didn't know much about coming into this exercise, and he's a guy I really didn't study because I knew you were taking him. So I said, hey, I'm gonna let Evan deliver the information to me, and I'm gonna go from there. We'll see. I mean, I don't believe that edge is gonna be the biggest need for the Buccaneers, especially entering like a day one, day two scenario. I'm in the camp that I think, you know, Shaq is coming back. I think JPP is coming back. I think even Carl Nassib is coming back. Now, if James Yarko gets his way and the Buccaneers bring in Kareem Hunt, then you can probably say goodbye to Carl Nassib. You might say goodbye to Ndamukong Suh. I don't know. Like, between JPP and Ndamukong Suh, it's something that could be debated on which one is really more important to this defense. But I think the fact that everybody pretty much assumes that had JPP not gotten injured in the offseason, he would have been a team captain, and that everybody pretty much assumes if he comes back next year, he will be a team captain, kind of gives him the edge a little bit. Because, again, between the white lines is great, but in the locker room, in the practice field, and in the meeting room is also very impactful. So I think JPP gets the edge there. So, if that scenario develops and you're looking for a defensive end, you're looking for a 3-4 defensive end, so a defensive lineman, not necessarily an edge rusher in the traditional sense, where edge rushers, you're usually talking about 4-3 defensive ends or outside linebackers in 3-4. We'll see how all that plays out, but still good information to know. And then, Evan, we were asked, so Jim dropped Aaron Parker, which I'm not going to lie, until Jim mentioned that name in the voicemail line, I didn't know who this kid was. And after watching him, I came away fairly impressed, but there's a caveat to that. So for those of you who don't know, like me, before I studied him, Aaron Parker, senior wide receiver out of University of Rhode Island in FCS school, 6'3", 208 pounds, 21 years old. Another football lineage guy is the nephew of former San Francisco 49er running back Walt Easley. His favorite athlete is Cam Newton, and he's a New York Giants fan. So I think we can just move on and forget it. Like, we can just trash him now, right?
of course, if James Yarko was on, we would just go ahead and trash him, right?
Exactly. We started six games as a freshman and in 2016 as a wide receiver, and he returned punts in his freshman season. Caught a pass in every single game as a sophomore and had three 100-yard receiving games as a sophomore as well. In 2019, he led the Colonial Athletic Association with 81 catches and over 1,200 yards receiving, finished with 10 100-yard receiving games in his career. So my evaluation of him real quick, he's a team captain. There's a trend there, and I think it's a good one to follow. He's a team captain, productive FCS wide receiver with 30 touchdowns, 216 receptions, and 3,460 career receiving yards. Has special teams experience only as a freshman. Flashes good ball skills, able to track and adjust with good body control. Plays his best in the slot and doesn't go down easily on first contact. Critical to his NFL prospects that he practice and play well at the East-West Shrine Game. So it's not like the most in-depth analysis. Evan, you know, I didn't get to watch the complete game he had against Ohio, which, of course, is an FBS competitor. I haven't gotten to watch his Virginia Tech quote-unquote film, if you want to call it that, yet either. But some of the things I have noticed are good things. He's got some good raw skills. You know, I think he's obviously in need of some polish, which we'll see how much of it is need of polish and how much of it is just a lack of raw ability in the East-West Shrine Game, where he's going to play against some better competition than he saw there in the FCS. Overall right now, I mean, he's got day three potential. I can see him as a day three guy. The highest draft pick in the history of the University of Rhode Island went in the fifth round back in like 1986, I want to say, if I remember correctly. So he has a chance to beat that mark, but I would be highly surprised if he went any earlier than the fifth round. So if he beats it, it's going to be in the fifth round, just earlier in the process.
You look at his stats from the past 2 years, 2018, he had 61 catches, 972 yards, 10 touchdowns, 97.2 yards a game. 2019, 81 receptions for 1,224 yards, 111 yards a game, and 9 touchdowns. I mean, dude, either way, that's a guy that makes plays. And just at what he can do at his size, I mean, almost kind of reminds me of Justin Watson. So if you can get him in a later round, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh round, somewhere in there, kind of like where you got Justin Watson coming out of Penn, then obviously this is a project worth developing. It's a guy worth considering. And, I mean, dude, just look at it this way. Antonio Brown came from freaking – wait, oh, God, here. I just now got all adamant about my point. Now I just spaced. Is it Central Michigan or Western Michigan? Either way – Antonio Brown came
Central from, Michigan. I'm pretty sure it's Central Michigan.
Yeah, either way. Antonio Brown came from one of those two schools who I can't even remember each one of those names. And so you can always develop receivers. Receiver and defensive end slash edge are probably the two positions you can teach in the NFL if you had to teach anything, where talent can just not take over. Just look at DK Metcalf. He's has all the talent in the world, but he's still got to at least learn some of the nuances of the position. So, and he's doing that right now. He's having a hell of a season. So I believe you get this guy in here, as much as I like Skylar Fulton and they don't have him around anymore, I believe, and I can't think of his name right off the top of my head, but Tampa Bay's current wide receivers coach is doing a pretty good job. I mean, look at him, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans from 2019, and then Breshad Perriman once both those guys got hurt. Either way, you get this guy in here, you develop him for a couple years, and yeah, he could definitely be a contributor a couple years down from the road.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This is definitely a guy like, and the Buccaneers are in a great situation to bring a guy like Aaron Parker in if they decide to do so, because he's a guy who, like we talked about, has some raw skills. He has the production, and that shows the ability to get things done. And at the end of the day, I can't remember who said there was an evaluator who said a long time ago where, you know, it doesn't have to look pretty as long as you're gaining yards and getting in the end zone. That's definitely not a direct quote.
He's got a quarterback who's not afraid to let the ball rip. So, I mean, either way, he'll be all right. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, so going back to my conversation with Scotty Miller during the season, he talked about how we already know, you know, the coaching staff, how valuable they are as teachers in the locker or in the meeting rooms, watching film on the practice field. But Scotty also talked about how much guys like Breshad, guys like Chris Godwin, guys like Mike Evans have also, you know, had also taken him under their wings and kind of showed them some things. And I mean, you're talking about, you know, 6 foot plus tall receivers who have a completely different skill set from Scotty Miller, but they're still able to understand the game in a way and understand defenses in a way where they can help this guy develop his own skill set and his own game and help out the offense. And you saw the improvement that he was having week to week. Unfortunately, injuries kind of hampered a lot of that, but when he was healthy, you could see that week to week improvement that he was getting. So Aaron Parker's another guy. You bring him, he's got some raw ability. Again, he's got punt return experience. I don't know exactly why he stopped returning punts, but I can tell you it wasn't because he wasn't just successful. He had a long punt return, like 26 yards, I want to say, with an average near at 10 yards per punt as a freshman. So I think it was more just getting him more involved in the offense, so keeping him off special teams more than anything else, which would make sense. But coming in as, you know, a fifth-round draft pick, sixth-round draft pick, you know, I'm sure that he'd be willing to go back there and flag some punts. And he showed physicality in some of the game tape that I was able to watch of him. So definitely a guy to watch. Jim, definitely appreciate digging deep there and finding him for us. Definitely appreciate that. So, Evan, we got one more, and that's Najee Harris, Alabama, who, interesting enough, hasn't even declared yet. So we're not even sure if we're talking about a draft prospect or we're talking about a guy who's going to return to Alabama. But go ahead and let people know what you found.
I mean, Kyle Krabs of the Draft Network kind of puts it perfectly. His first two words of his scouting report, big fella, reminds me a lot of Derrick Henry. Najee Harris is 6'2", 230. Derrick Henry is 6'3", 38. So, I mean, it just feels natural that with every inch you gain like an extra 8 pounds. I mean, that just feels like a pretty good scale to compare people on. Can catch the ball. Very, very good when it comes to zone runs, and can bang it between the tackles whenever he needs to using that big body. When you look at what he did in 2019, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of his 13 games went over 100 yards. Had 105 yards at minimum in all those games, and that was against Tennessee. Got to represent on that one, not really. But either way, Auburn, just put it this way, he went for, let's see, 27 carries, 146 yards, 5.4 yards a carry, and one touchdown against Auburn, who was the fourth overall defense when it came to Football Outsiders metrics in 2019. And they were also 18th in adjusted line yards per game when it comes to stopping running backs. So he just absolutely destroyed them, showed that he can get it done against a level of higher competition, and or a higher level of competition, rather, I should say. And overall, it feels like he's like Derrick Henry. Give him a couple years. Don't take him too high. I know the Titans took him, I think, second round. I want to say 46th overall, if I remember correctly. I don't feel like Tampa Bay should spend that high of a draft pick on him. But if they could get him in the third or fourth round, give him a couple years to develop, then I feel like this would be a really good fit for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything. I've obviously gotten to watch Harry. I mean, can't call yourself a college football fan if you've never watched Alabama and seen Najee Harris play this year. He's definitely got upside. Whether he comes out or not is a big question. I know Matt Miller, Bleacher Report's got him ranked as like the number four running back right now, which in today's NFL landscape, I mean, that could have him going in the third round, to be honest with you, depending on how things unfold. So that might be one reason why he hasn't made a decision yet. He's considering coming back. And then some of his offensive linemen who were eligible, you know, we know Wills is coming out, but some of the other guys are coming back, and obviously they have a good thing going there in Alabama. So we'll see what Harris decides to do. But if he comes back, if he comes out, he's definitely an interesting prospect. Talking about other interesting prospects, Evan, let's go ahead and answer this last voicemail before we get out of here.
This is Troy from Marvin, Georgia. I know a lot of people don't like Jameis, but I think he's doing better. I think he's learning from the new coach. Hey, David, who do you think we should draft for the first round and second round to help Jameis out? Thanks, man. Good luck.
Nailed it.
All right, Troy. I appreciate your call. I mean, I always love from hearing from Troy out there in Georgia. So keep him coming, buddy. And yeah, I mean, you know, we don't want to spend too much time on Jameis, but he definitely showed some growth during the season. We're just going to leave it at that for right now. We'll talk about that topic again another time. But talking about draft process,
plenty of time to talk about that topic.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, we can talk about whether or not Tom Brady's going to do better than Jameis when he gets here, when he gets to Tampa.
Goats don't belong in Tampa Bay.
Talking about first and second round draft picks, look, I kind of already said on one of our previous episodes, as the roster sits right now, and if it goes the way I kind of think it's going to go in the offseason, the way that a lot of people think it's going to go in the offseason, I really see the biggest hole on this roster right now being at the free safety position. And
I'm with you, man.
In that light, I like a guy like Grant Delpit, who, yes. You know, I mean,
yes.
There's a mixed bag of evaluation on him out there, but I really think he's a guy who come in, especially with some tutelage, especially playing in a young secondary. It's kind of weird because we usually don't advertise playing in a young group of guys as a benefit for a rookie. But this young group of guys, they matured so much together throughout the season that if Grant can come in, and I mean, all reports out of LSU, out of Baton Rouge, he's a great teammate. He's a guy that people want to play with. He's a guy who wants to play with his teammates, not play above his teammates. So I think that Grant's the kind of guy who come into this system, look at Jamel, look at Sean, look at Carlton, look at Jordan and say, man, I cannot like the amount of success you guys had in such a short period of time and the growth. I need me some of that. And he's going to come in not so much being the star, but more being the student who could become a star because he can get lifted up on the experience of his brothers. So he's a guy that I'm looking for. Now, in my mock draft that I did earlier in January for Bucks Nation, he got taken by the Browns a couple of picks before I was able to come on the clock. So that's why I took AJ Epenesa. I'm really not that high on an edge guy in the first round. Honestly, if Delpit's not there and, you know, some of these other players aren't there that we assume won't be there, I'm more in favor of trading back, but that's really nothing new. If you've been paying attention to my draft coverage for Bucks Nation or any other site for a while now, you know I'm a huge draft trade back type of guy. Looking in the second round, I mean, we talked about him today. Antoine Winfield Jr., if he's in the second round, that's a great selection. Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson is another safety that I really like right now coming out. So I'm really kind of looking at the safety position. That's kind of where my focus has been, and probably will stay for a little bit. There are some other players out there, of course, but for right now, guys like Grant Delpit, Antoine Winfield Jr., and Isaiah Simmons, those are the guys that are on my radar.
I really feel like that no matter what improvement you make, whether it's on the offensive or defensive side of the ball, is going to help Jameis no matter what. I'm absolutely with you. Grant Delpit, if he is there at 14, the Bucs have to take him. He will be by far the best player on the board and the biggest need as well. And the fact that you can squash two birds with one stone in that regard very rarely happens in the NFL, especially in the NFL draft, so you have to take him. He would allow so much flexibility in the secondary, especially if you bring my guy Logan Ryan on board. But even without bringing Logan Ryan on board, he would still allow for Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, and the other young guys to advance their game and get better at what they do. But at the same time, I would love to see the Bucs take an offensive tackle. If the offensive tackle, like let's say a Willis is there or a Wills is there at 14, would love to see that. But outside of that, I think Jameis is okay. I really think what you need to do is if you can't protect him in the front five, then you protect him with the defensive 11. And that's by stocking up on defense and assuring yourself that if he does make a back-breaking mistake or if the Bucs make a bad penalty or, you know, so on and so forth, a mental mistake that we've seen them make, they led the league in penalties last year in 2019, then obviously there's other areas that can compensate for those mistakes. So obviously Delpit if he's there, but an offensive tackle would be great. Obviously, you don't need to do wide receiver or tight end or running back in the first round. I've seen a couple of mock drafts with Jonathan Taylor in the first round. That to me just blows my mind. Yeah, but I feel like this is like the non-direct year to help Jameis, if that makes any sense. Like not drafting a wide receiver, not drafting a running back, but players that get better around him and allow him to be better. That is this year. That's kind of the motto for this draft.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, listen, you make the defense stronger, and if the turnover problem returns, they can withstand the turnover problem as long as, you know, like if we get 25 interceptions and two pick sixes, then this defense is in a better position to keep offenses of the end zone, even during those quick change scenarios. You made the defense better. They're in a better position to take the ball back. You know what I mean? Yep. Which is always a great thing to do when your offense gives it away, you take it back and it's basically a one for one swap and it's no harm, no foul. And then again, you know, offensive line, you know, I'm with you. I love Jonathan Taylor, but first round for a running back, this game is so far beyond drafting a running back in the first round now.
Exactly.
Honestly, like, I've never been a general manager, but I'm the way I think about football is always kind of ever developing. And I'm to the point right now with this game where me personally, like if I had the opportunity to general manage a team, I would never draft a running back in the first round. I honestly don't think I would ever do that because I'm essentially never looking to re-sign a star running back. And so if I'm going to invest first round capital in a player, it's going to be a guy that I can foresee with my franchise for 10 plus years. Not 4 or 5, and then watch him walk away for a compensatory draft pick later. It just doesn't seem like a proper, you know, investment. You can make a, you know, there's James Conners everywhere, and so on. So I don't want to get too deep into that whole thing, but that's pretty much my theory of it. So as big of a fan as I am of Taylor, and even a guy like J.K. Dobbins, like if J.K. creeps into that first round conversation, I'm good. We'll see you later. You know, have fun in your pro career. But if he's in the second round, okay. Maybe we can talk a little bit, but you know we'll see how things unfold. But yeah, so guys, again, we appreciate the input. We appreciate the recommendations. I think 5 is a good number, man. We had 5 prospects. I think we were able to give some pretty good information about them and cover them pretty good without rushing it and without extending it too long. But we're gonna call this first batch of prospects done. So to recap, we got Antoine Winfield, safety out of Minnesota. Jedrick Wills, the offensive tackle out of Alabama. Curtis Weaver, edge rusher out of Boise State. Najee Harris, running back out of Alabama. And Aaron Parker, wide receiver out of Rhode Island. That's going to do it, guys, for our Thursday episode here at the Locked On Bucks podcast. Again, I am David Harrison. Follow me on Twitter at DH82_Bucks. My guest, as he always has been all year on Thursdays, Evan Winter. Follow him at Evan_Winter on Twitter. Find everything we're writing about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, including why Tampa Bay is not the right place for Tom Brady, over at BucksNation.com. Find that on Twitter at Bucks_Nation. And the show on Twitter at LockedOnBucks. I never remember to pull up the voicemail number before I get to this part of the show. And I don't have it memorized.
I was just going to say, there's so much you got to remember. So I'm shocked that you got through this much.
Oh, it took a lot of practice, trust me. And I mess it up more often than not. If you would like to leave your own prospect recommendations or your thoughts on these prospects, am I wrong about Antoine Winfield Jr.? He's a day 3, if not undrafted free agent. By all means, drop it in there. Let us know. The phone number is 813-444-5841. James and I will be back tomorrow for our Friday episode. We are going to talk Star Wars Episode 9. We're also going to have Jill Beckman on. So forgive us, guys. We're going to kind of revisit the 2019 recaps. Jill was not available the week that we did them, but we wanted to make sure we got her on to get that social media aspect of the Buccaneers. So we're going to bring her on. We're going to talk about her experiences in 2019. And then we're going to talk about the future. And then we're going to talk about Star Wars. So until we do all that, until we meet again, thank you so much for joining me right here at Locked On.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.